All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim.
And welcome one and all to episode 47 of the SLS Cast. Yes, the episode in which we are now at one with Theodore Geisel. Yes, Dr. Seuss, the man, children, and parents, I guess as a byproduct, know and love, published 47 books in his lifetime. And here we are on episode 47. Yes, I am your host. Well, I'm one of the two adorable thing ones and thing twos that we have on our show. I am Matt.
Adorable thing ones and thing twos?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
I was just trying to keep with the theme of Dr. Seuss.
So are we going to be man-children this episode?
Why not?
We are the man-children of the movie, film, podcasting community.
Exactly.
Yes, and I am Tim, the probably more tired co-host. Well, no, I guess that could be debatable, because sometimes you are pretty tired when we record.
Well, I was up till about 2 o'clock this morning myself, because I cheated on next week's episode. But other than that, why are you so tired?
Well, okay, last night was Halloween, and this past week has just been super crazy, and as, well, hopefully, by the time you folks are listening to this episode, you would have already listened to our super special, awesome, five-star quality little Sector SLS that we made for November 1st. We made it in commemoration of the 1st of November. That is right.
Remember the 1st of November, right?
Yes.
Is that how it goes? No, that's not how it goes.
When but the we're governing gonna pretend migrant came and went and attacked.
Yeah.
Other than editing and getting ready for the shows and for Halloween and seeing what little family I do have over here in California, I was lucky enough to go see one of my favorite bands twice. Tuesday late afternoon, they did a special concert to promote their new album that came out, Reflector, on Tuesday, and it's Arcade Fire. And so they performed right in front of Capitol Records. Capitol Records was the backdrop, and on a stage there, you know, had the VIP treatment, and it was awesome. One of the better hour experiences at any concert I've ever had. Last weekend, I got tickets to go see them again last night at the Palladium. And it was like, you know, you'd go and you dress up. You either dress in the theme, which was Reflector, so a lot of people were wearing a foil, stuff made out of foil. Chelsea, the girlfriend, she wore sequins, silver sequin jacket. I just looked like I looked like a movie reviewer with my nice with my pants and my button-down collared shirt, which was, believe it or not, was quite of in contrast with most of the other people that were attending. And other people were just
that's
in Halloween costumes.
But that's okay, though, Tim. See, because you can say that you are a hipster, all right? Because, you know, costumes and themes are so mainstream that you have transcended that and are no longer there. You are now no longer into costumes and themes before it will become cool. I'm just trying to help, but I'm sorry, I'm probably not.
Well, the problem with that is that you could be correct. I could have possibly have pulled that off if it wasn't for my super fluffy hair. I took a shower yesterday, which how dare I take a shower before doing
fluffy
anything?
Fluffy hair, okay.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I have a mass layer of hay hair, and it's especially more hay constantly. Like, during the concert, I'm sweating and doing, you can't see this motion I'm doing, but I'm violently swooping hair to the back. And at the same time, I'm poking people in the face while doing it. It was a predicament at times, but digressing on my end about my hair. I'm starting to sound like Jesse from Full House in a way. But my hair was not at, even then, my hair would have been some kind of cool. And I could have been possibly transcending some kind of fashion style, or even some kind of fashion statement, if I had Jesse Consopoulos' hair, Greek hair, but I'm Polak, and I have hay hair. Anyway, so we went to this concert last night, and I experienced my first Hollywood Halloween last year, and that's when we got stuck in the middle of a raid in our car, and we had the three, four people got shot and killed, and there are gunshots going on, and we're just stuck in my little bitty Hyundai accent stick shift in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard, and we're stuck in the middle of, like, caution crime scene police tape, and we're just stuck in there. And then there are, like, cops on horseback just charging right over us, and there's people, like, going over the car and hitting the window, and very dramatic. It was like a John Carpenter post-apocalyptic type of thing. It was insane. So I thought, surely, this year, since instead of being in Santa Clarita, we're going to be right in Hollywood, where we can just take the side exit out, we'll just bypass all the shit, everything will be fine. Well, one would think that, until when we were leaving the venue to walk back to the car, and this homeless guy walks by. And this motherfucker. And I have nothing against homeless people, if they're not delirious assholes. And this guy just makes the crudest, sexist comment to my girlfriend. And I think any smart male, or just any male in general with balls, would absolutely say something. And they wouldn't let that situation go by. I had to say something. It wasn't like he was like, oh man, that woman's fine. And he was a white guy, so he doesn't sound like that. But it was just like F-word, vulgarity, and stuff like that. So of course, I turn around and, you know, shut the fuck. And this guy, God, just like a crazy Vietnam vet of some sort that took way too much acid in his day, unleashes and just starts running at us, running. And so all that shit kind of happens. Another guy next to me, who I will say was more on the rough side of the street, butted in also, but the homeless guy took out this, I don't know what the hell was in this Coke bottle. I'm just gonna, for the sake of what got on my face, that it was Coke. And he just threw it at me, and it just clipped the side of my head and, like, just knocked me out for a little while. The homeless guy's running off saying, oh, yeah, I'm gonna snap your fucking neck, just all this stuff. So it made for an absolutely horrible end to an otherwise once-in-a-lifetime experience. Because, oh yeah, the Arcade Fire thing, we got to see him in a small venue, and we were super close, just 10 feet away from him. Like, I used to love Halloweens until I moved out here. And then I realized it's all about the anticipation. And therefore, I just came home to help me go to sleep. I watched Barbie's Dreamhouse that Matt so lovingly recommended for me to watch. And I will say that it does have a lot of pop culture references in it that will take your mind off of absolutely anything. Especially after getting attacked by a homeless man with a Coke bottle. Which, is Ken gay in that show?
I'm pretty sure everyone is gay in that show. I just have absolutely no idea what anyone is really thinking or what they're really doing. But I just thought it was so rampant with pop culture references that kids, for the most part, will have absolutely no idea of. I could not believe how funny it was when I was watching it. I was like, I cannot believe this is a Barbie show. It was one of those rare times that I was actually enjoying what I thought was something designed for chicks. But I have to wonder if it was written by dudes or not. Because, yeah, it was funny to me. I don't know. We're talking about Barbie Life in the Dream House. It's available on Netflix. There are two episodes. And it's funny. I don't know how else to explain it. It's funny. Check it out.
Yeah, it moves so fast. Like, it just jumps to the next thing. And, like, no, like, one scene doesn't last more than maybe 8 seconds. 8 or 10 seconds. And I just really don't understand how that can hold the attention span of a 7-year-old girl. I don't know. Did your daughter like it? Does she?
Yeah, they watched it. As a matter of fact, this morning, Chloe, my almost 4-year-old, was wanting to watch it again today. Maybe it's like most things that kids are into, where it's just the idea of something that they enjoy, something that is special to them. So when I was growing up, it was G.I. Joe. And I love G.I. Joe, and so I always watched G.I. Joe, and I had no idea how corny half that shit was, or maybe how there's probably some innuendo in there that I may have missed, but I didn't care because I was watching G.I. Joe. Same thing with Transformers or what have you. And maybe that's the same thing here. They're just putting in stuff so that parents will not lose their minds when they're forced to have a kid's show on. And
right.
By God, I can appreciate that kind of effort.
And therefore, yeah. Makers of Barbie Dreamhouse, the SLS cast, salute you.
Our salute to Barbie Life in the Dreamhouse. Oh my goodness. So yeah, you definitely had a more exciting week than I. Other than I did find out from TheVerge.com yesterday, I think it was, that, yes, courtesy of Adi Robertson.
Adi?
Adi. A-D-I. Adi? 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 I don't know. That's what we're going to go with. And
Adi don't know.
There you go. The FAA has officially approved using electronics during all phases of flight. The byline is Delta hopes to have a new plan in place as early as tomorrow. So apparently, this Adi, or Adi, or whatever, seems to like Delta more than everybody else. I'm not sure. But yes, aside from the not actually being on a phone call, and you can't have bars, so you can put your phone in airplane mode. You can now, it doesn't matter if it is in the pre-flight mode, in the landing, in the takeoff, or whatever. You can now have your electronic devices on. You can use them at all times. For the laptops and tablets, you would have to have them stowed, but you don't have to turn them off anymore. They basically just don't care anymore. They have finally gotten to the point where, okay, we admit there's really no problem with having an electronic device turned on. The only reason why you may not be able to see it, depending by carrier, by airline carrier, is because, for example, would a laptop safely fit in the little pouch in front of you, you know, because that's where they want you to hold them now. So you can now stick your tablets and stuff in the pouch in front of you instead of having to stow items like that and everything. And so I thought that was pretty cool. Welcome to the 21st century airlines. Yay! And that was just kind of interesting, and I wanted to share that with you, which should tell you just exactly how much excitement I had this week.
That he's reporting news. Actual news.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just thought that was kind of interesting. I mean,
we secretly know this is going to be his resume for NPR.
Oh, well, I did that too, actually. I finally broke down and am now a sustaining member of my local public radio station, KUHF. Yeah. I am now one of the 10%. Apparently there's a good 10%. You know how, like, you're not supposed to be the rich top 1% or whatever?
Yeah.
Well, there's a good 10%, and that 10% is people who actually donate to public radio. So.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could have donated.
I don't know, dude. I'm kind of having a hard time feeling sorry for you with your going to concerts, multiple concerts every week.
Yeah, I just got lucky.
If you could just give up one concert a year, you could probably support your public radio station.
Well, one of them was completely free. So.
Aha! So, see? The one you paid for, and you could have gone on to the other one for free anyway.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
The one I paid for, I got a bottle in the face of who knows what.
You see, that was your public. That homeless guy works for your public radio station.
Well.
See, if you had been able to tell him, but I support public radio, he would have stopped mid throw and been like, oh, well, all right then. Sorry about your girlfriend, and then walked away.
Yeah. Well, I'd take back what I said about snapping your neck and cutting off your balls.
Well, no, he probably would have meant that part.
You know what's even funnier is waiting in line to get into the concert, a lady was walking by taking donations for a food bank for the homeless, and I gave her money in support. So as he was making these comments, I had a sticker that said, I support homeless food shelters or feeding the homeless. A lot of ironicness to kind of throw into that bundle of craziness.
Nothing like irony to make your day, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then I guess let's just jump right into the nitty gritty then.
Yes.
With
the news!
All right. Okay. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first.
All right, knock yourself out, sir.
Okay, so there is a new type of IMAX that has been developed, and it's called ScreenX, and it is being hailed as the horizontal IMAX, and it offers three screens of side-by-side action. It is the horizontal equivalent to IMAX. ScreenX offers a 270-degree view projected onto three walls in front of the viewers, but also to their left and their right. South Korean director Kim Ji-woon, who most recently directed Arnold Schwarzenegger's foray back into Hollywood cinema with The Last Stand, but he also did films like I Saw the Devil and A Tale of Two Sisters. Woon directed the first ScreenX movie. It was a 30-minute short called The X. And The X was described by the Wall Street Journal as having scenes raging from a panoramic shot of a bullet-slinging chase to a technically simpler scene involving a phone conversation between killers. I initially thought ScreenX would be more effective for spectacular scenes, but came to realize that it is unexpectedly effective for lyrical or creepy scenes too, Kim observed. Though, making such a movie was like hell and nightmare. At one point, 30 crew members had to line up directly behind the camera to avoid being in a shot. Still, the director is pleased with the final results, which he thinks offer a stronger cinematic experience to audiences than IMAX by making them feel the images are filling the space fully. End quote. So that should be kind of interesting. I like that because, honestly, if you think about it, it's not necessarily how tall a screen is, but how wide your screen is. CinemaScope, the ScreenoVision type of thing, you know, like the Cinerama Dome out here, it's...
I was going to say it sounds an awful lot like the Canada film at Epcot that I saw earlier this year, where you're standing in this kind of domed room and you could turn around almost a full 360 degrees and it's one giant picture. And they achieve that by having three or four screens that make the dome and then small little gaps that you cannot see at the base of the screens, mm-hmm. between the screens, that point the projectors at the screen so that this way there's no seam on them. Because that's the kind of thing that would, like, okay, is there going to be a seam? Is it going to be obvious that you're looking at three different screens and they're just trying to do one picture? Like when you're at the sports bar and they've got, hey, look at our 12 TVs that look like a giant fucking Brady Bunch board while you're trying to watch it, and it's kind of blocking most of the picture anyway. But hey, right. It's all one big picture.
Right, yeah, no, yeah, it's all how the cameras are lined up. And even now, with modern technology, and I'm sure with this, it's just one specific projector that's able to show it, that's able to display it. And because my thing is that it's not, whenever you go and see an IMAX, any movie can be blown up to IMAX. And honestly, it's a taller screen, it is a bigger screen, but a lot of people go spend the extra money because it's flawless sound. However, depending on movies... Like, I went and saw Carrie in, like, ETX, the Enhanced Theater Seating or Cinema or whatever it stands for. And the movie sounded the same as if you went and saw it on a smaller screen. So it just seems like IMAX and these bigger, better screens are just becoming more of a market for any movie just looking for some more money. However, I think with the ScreenX... This seems like something that's more of a... Like, the film can't necessarily be converted to this. Any particular film cannot, because how much it has to expand. It's like if you take a standard definition movie, and you do that zoom-in feature, on your DVD or Blu-ray player, and it just stretches the screen out. So everybody looks fatter. Like, faces are kind of stretched out, bodies are stretched out. So with this type of thing, you actually have to shoot it in this ScreenX technology. So... I don't know, I'm kind of looking forward to it. It seems like it'd be really neat, and especially more of an immersive theater experience. God, talk about watching something like Avatar in 3D in that kind of environment where you can, like, literally just look around and turn your head and just, you know, be amazed at looking at whatever special effect or something. So I thought that was kind of neat. So Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, I believe that's what it's called, is coming out in December. However, director Adam McKay wants to release a second version of Anchorman 2. This is what he said during an interview with Empire Magazine. He says that, quote, "We did so much improv on this one that we can literally replace every single joke in the movie and put in alternate scenes in alternate improv runs. I think the editor's working on it right now with 250 new jokes. I think it would be really funny to put it in theaters for midnight showings. I know that I, personally, if I loved a movie and someone told me that, like, if Airplane had been released with all new jokes, I'd be like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. I'd see it in a second. End quote. What do you think about that, Matt? Because, I mean, they did Wake Up Ron Burgundy, which was the direct-to-DVD video that was released with the...
That was all outtakes. Yeah, it was basically all outtakes and extra footage and stuff and other improv runs. I think that they should just do that again. I have absolutely all the faith in the world that these guys could successfully have a full edited movie that has a contextual plot that can be related to the second film, just like the first one was, or the bonus film, I guess, was contextually related to the first one. But I don't know. I don't think that they should. I think they might be jumping the gun a little bit on it, because while it is funny, there's a reason why it's cut, and it's not always just for time. And even though you can put that stuff together and they can make it work and it is still funny, I found that bonus Ron Burgundy from the first movie was not quite as good as the actual classic that we now know and love. So,
I like how they're saying it's not going to be a separate storyline, that it's the same movie, but it's just completely like alternate takes, which would be kind of interesting, because nothing like that has ever been done, releasing two different versions, two different complete versions of a single movie, especially comedy. All right, next up, I have three or four little pieces of news here that I'm going to, a little spitfire round I'm going to implement on my side of the news from now on to kind of speed things up a bit. Independence Day 2 has two scripts, one with Will Smith and another without. Director Roland Emmerich says that the version featuring Smith was looking good. I guess opposed to the version that is not featuring Will Smith is not looking good? I'm not too sure what he means by that, but we are ready for whatever Will Smith wants to do with that franchise. Tom Hardy will be in Elton John.
Oh my.
Wait a minute. Tom Hardy will be Elton John. Excuse me.
Elton John would probably say you had it right the first time.
Probably so. In an upcoming biopic about Elton John, last time I checked, it was called Rocket Man. And what's interesting about this movie is that Elton John wants to be in the kind of like Moulin Rouge. It is a biography about his life, but it has more fantastical elements, just more of like a sweeping, visually striking musical, which I guess that fits him completely because he's a striking person. And I use striking in multiple other ways, I guess. Emile Hirsch will be portraying John Belushi in an upcoming John Belushi biopic. And that's bizarre because Emile Hirsch is kind of I guess he's scrawny. He's a smaller guy, so he's going to have to bulk up a bit to play John Belushi. I don't see it, but you know what? I didn't see Jared Leto playing a transvestite in Dallas Buyers Club either. And I hear he looks great in it. And I hear he's amazing in it, so we'll see how that goes. Clive Barker is now pinning the Hellraiser remake with Doug Bradley, who will be reprising his role as Pinhead. He had a meeting with Bob Weinstein of Dimension Pictures, and apparently it has been greenlit. It is on the go-to-make. And I know Matt has some Star Wars news, but I just have this to say. Via StarWars.com, it is announced that J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark. He was also co-writer on Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Originally, Lawrence Kasdan was only a consultant for the upcoming Star Wars movie. Turns out that now, both him and J.J. Abrams have assumed screenwriting duties for the upcoming Star Wars movie. So, that's cool. It sounds like they are really trying to keep this upcoming flick in the same realm of the original trilogy. So, and that's all the news I've got.
Wonderful news, wonderful news. All right, so here's my news. First up, from Prometheus2-movie.com. I think these people are very excited to have a Prometheus 2 film. Turns out that Ridley Scott confirms Prometheus 2 is still on the way. No! The hell you say, Chris Picard. The hell you say, running a website called Prometheus2-movie.com, and then confirming that a sequel is still coming. That's right. Naysayers be damned. Prometheus 2 is still happening, as we've persistently been reporting. Apparently, Chris is very adamant about that there's going to be a sequel coming. And he says, from the mouth of Sir Ridley Scott himself, who spoke recently at a press junket for his latest film, The Counselor, he confirmed that Prometheus 2 is currently still being written. And it is being written with Jack Paglen currently scripting the story, and hopefully we will find out. I just wanted to make sure that people knew that, because I was a fan of Prometheus. There are a lot of haters of Prometheus. I'm not really sure why. I'm not trying to say that it's the best movie in all of the Aliens movies, but I mean, I'm sorry, there's a reason why Ridley Scott was able to launch this franchise back in 1978. I thought he did a pretty damn good job here. For those of you who hate the movie because it's, quote, full of plot holes, end quote, there is actually a 30-minute video, literally, because it takes that long to go through it. I think it's like a little over 28 minutes, but whatever. That they actually have someone who went and had talked to people, looked up factual sites from people who were involved in the movie and everything, and had actually watched the movie. They've watched the movie, and they literally go through and debunk every plot hole that people seem to come up with in the whole movie. And it's not just opinion. It's things that they have been able to source. And also based on commentaries from the DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever. So for me, I'm actually excited to hear this news. I don't know if anyone else is. Next up, though, we've got from NBCNews.com, courtesy of Gail Faschingbauer Cooper, we have some sad news. And this is more from the TV side of the world, but I thought that it was still important because I thought that this person was really cool as an actress and was definitely involved in at least one movie, which would have been The Simpsons movie.
Well, that's not what I was going to say, but it's a good idea.
Now, I know everybody's eager to get back to class.
Ha! So today, we all have to stay 2 extra hours to make up for the time we lost. Ha!
Aww. Attention, teachers! We're on strike! Ha!
Well, that's a lame excuse for an excuse.
Ha! Hey, does this mean that Mrs. Krabappel is a virgin, too?
Ha! Spend it on something fun. Go wild! Ha! Right, Seymour?
Yes.
God, I'm stinking nice. Well, there goes Christmas dinner.
Ha! It looks good, but I'm not going to celebrate till he's gaffed, gutted, and hanging in my trophy room. Ha!
Did a volcano erupt in Candyland? Because I just caught me a flying red hot.
Ha! Oh.
Where's your husband buried?
Probably between the hooters of a coat check girl in Shelbyville. Ha!
Yes, I am referring to Marshall Wallace, who became famous to many as the sassy, redheaded receptionist on The Bob Newhart Show, and also voiced Bart's crabby teacher on The Simpsons, died in Los Angeles last week. She was 70. Kind of sad news, and I wanted to kind of share that with you guys there. And while, again, she was known primarily for her roles in The Simpsons and where I first saw her, because I am ancient... apparently, I actually watched her on The Bob Newhart Show. I thought she was awesome. One of the coolest cameos she ever did was, I don't know if anybody ever watched Murphy Brown. Again, because I'm ancient. Ancient. I can talk, I promise. But Murphy Brown was suffering from never having a good person who could be an assistant or a secretary for her. And so every week it was just a revolving door of secretaries or receptionists or whatever. And then one week it was her. And she's basically reprising her role from The Bob Newhart Show. And I mean, it's fantastic. And then, of course, the gag is that she's finally good. And then it's the end of the week, and she's like, okay, well, it was nice working for you. I got to go. And she's like begging her to stay. She's like, no, oh my God, what do you think you're doing? You have to stay. You're the best person ever. And she literally says, oh no, I'm on vacation from my real job in Minnesota where I work for a psychologist or whatever. I think he was a psychiatrist, actually. But yeah, so it was just kind of funny how they. I love that stuff. And then, of course, we all know her from there. She appeared on such shows as Brady Bunch, Charles in Charge, ALF, Different World, Magnum PI, even The Young and the Restless. She did the game show circuit as well. She was on Hollywood Squares a lot, Match Game, $25,000 Pyramid. And had even been in a couple of movies that people may or may not have heard of, like Teen Witch. That's right. And she had even filmed a part in the upcoming 2014 film Muffin Top, A Love Story. So hopefully we'll get to see that.
Hopefully that is not her last credit.
I don't know. I just want to see her, especially with something like that. Yeah, I don't know. Just kind of sad. I mean, 70 years is definitely a pretty good life, I would have to say, but...
You know, what's interesting is that her character on The Simpsons, what's her name?
Krabappel.
Yeah, Krabappel. They're going to be retiring her from the show. So what's great is that because of how iconic that character is, they're not just going to bring another actress to come in and take over the role. They're just going to retire the character, which I think is great.
Yes, and that's one of the things that just goes to show how truly legendary someone can become, even in the world of voice acting, when things like that happen. So, again, R.I.P. Marsha Wallace. Next up, Kevin Tencheroen. For those who might not know that name, this comes to us from IGN.com, courtesy of Jim Vivoda. Oh, yes, we're going to go with that. Kevin Tencheroen exits Mortal Kombat movie reboot. Now, you're thinking, wait a minute. There was a Mortal Kombat movie reboot? There was actually one on the way. This was the man who actually brought back any kind of real interest into Mortal Kombat by creating the Mortal Kombat Legacy web series. And it was so good that they had actually gone and said that they were going to do a series, a second season of it. And at that point, they were trying to go ahead and try and actually rehash it and turn it into a film. But unfortunately, Kevin tweeted the following. After 3 years of combat, with a K of course, I've decided to move on to other creative opportunities. I wish everyone involved in the movie big success. Thanks. That's kind of sad because, wow. I actually watched that web series. I thought it was a really good series. And it made me very excited for an actual film. I loved how, for the most part, they grounded it in reality. Of course, there are certain elements that are involved in Mortal Kombat that cannot be explained logically, and so therefore some spiritual elements and things of that nature were brought in. But overall, I thought it was just an excellent way to bring together some really cool people. A lot of actors you wouldn't have thought would be involved in something like this, and then, bam, here they are. I just thought that was something that you guys would want to know about. Hopefully the movie will still happen, but at the same time, now I'm not sure if I want it to. Second to last for me, from JediNews.co.uk, courtesy of Team Jedi News. Rumor alert for Star Wars Episode 7, Harrison Ford is back. All right. Han Solo, Harrison Ford, is back and on board for Episode 7, but that's not all. As part of the deal, steps have been made which raise the possibility of Ford donning the famed fedora hat of Indiana Jones once more. According to sources, a verbal agreement with Ford to play Han Solo once more has been in principal place since before the Disney deal. Over the course of this summer, financial settlements were reached. The outstanding points that had dragged on but are now resolved are: Ford wanted to see the synopsis of his character's development over more than just Episode 7. He saw this in August and is happy with the story arc. Ford wanted a commitment to Indy 5. he did not get this, as there is no plot line or script in place. What did happen was an agreement was made wherein an outline would be developed by the end of calendar year 2014, and if all parties can agree to it moving forward, efforts would be made to move on Indy 5 for release before the end of 2016. Finally, Disney wanted a multi-film deal with Ford, which transcends Episode 7. This has now been agreed. As ever, and I really appreciate this from a fan news website, as ever, until confirmed by Lucasfilm, Disney, or Bad Robot, this is just a rumor and should be treated as so. This is not just the only place that's been reporting this, and I'm not sure why, but Harrison Ford really does want a fifth Indiana Jones film. As far as I'm concerned, can we just have a good fourth Indiana Jones film? I would take that. How about we reshoot the fourth Indiana Jones film, and then, yeah, I don't know. It does, however, kind of give some hope, because that means there is a plan for him to be involved in more than just Episode 7, and I think that's probably the coolest thing of all. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, that'll work for sure. And finally, from DesDeHollywood.com, Evil Dead writer confirms he and Fede Alvarez exited the sequel. Yes. After the critical and financial success of this year's Evil Dead, much has been said about a potential sequel. In April, the director of the remake, Fede Alvarez, told us he was going to write it because he wanted to, quote, define Mia's story, end quote, in a second chapter. The Uruguayan even toyed with the idea of helping shape a trilogy that would merge with Sam Raimi's version in an epic seventh entry. 1 month ago, he gave the impression that Evil Dead 2 was put on temporary hold. All the pressure is on Army of Darkness 2, end quote. Well, horror fan, don't hold your breath. Our colleague, Al Gorosito, also from Uruguay, talked to Roto Sayaguiz, I apologize if I've messed that up, recently for his TV/radio movie show called De Peliculia. In this exclusive video interview, blah, 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 in this exclusive video interview, the Evil Dead co-writer and longtime collaborator of Alvarez reveals that the much-anticipated sequel to their remake has been buried for a while. Quote, look, I am sorry to tell you this, but that movie won't happen. Evil Dead 2 is not going to happen, at least not with us involved. We left that project many months ago because we preferred to put our energies on other things. I don't know if the producers still have intentions of making it, but what I can tell you is that we are not a part of that project. End quote. Tim, what do you think about this disturbing news in the Force?
Well, the only reason why they're not going to be making the sequel to the remake is because Sam Raimi is wanting to focus on Army of Darkness 2. So it's kind of like, which one do you prefer? Do you prefer there being a sequel to Army of Darkness, or do you want to see a sequel to the remake of Evil Dead?
I'm sorry, this is once again something for the Tostitos girl. Why not both? I don't understand. Even though they are rooted in the same mythology.
Right.
But they are not the same thing. It's kind of like when... Okay, I'll give you a perfect example. Star Trek Next Generation versus Star Trek DS9 versus Star Trek Voyager. Okay? These were three shows that ran two at a time parallel to one another. So while Star Trek Next Generation was on, it crossed over and had DS9 come on, and they were running simultaneously for a season and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final season, for the last season and a half or so of Deep Space Nine, you also had Star Trek Voyager. Now, did one detract from the other? No. Were they essentially related to one another? Yes. Were they the exact same thing? Not even remotely. And that's the same thing that we have here. Because Army of Darkness is kind of the spiritual successor to what the Evil Dead franchise initially was about, but it's not, I mean, let's face it, aside from Deadites, they don't have anything in common, doesn't really have anything in common with Evil Dead anymore because of the path it took. And that's fine, it's great, it's wonderful, and I'm glad with that. Evil Dead, especially with this remake, was clearly about a demon, a supernatural horror, something like that, that has taken over via the Book of the Dead. The only thing that the two things have related is the Book of the Dead, and it's not even the same exact thing done this time. So you can still do both. You can have the evil. You can have the Army of Darkness sequel, and they don't. It's not like they even have to come out at the same time. It seems that there's no reason to not have. I mean, even just a script. Who said? Don't even put it in production. Get a script done. You know, for Evil Dead 2, and then let Army of Darkness 2 run its course. I think that this is perfectly acceptable to have both at the same time. I don't.
Yeah, but it's also, I guess, maybe the money situation. It's coming out from the same distributors and the same studio. And if they have to choose to fund one over the other, I mean, maybe the only reason why they're not committing to an Evil Dead 2 is because of the Army of Darkness 1, but that doesn't mean that next year they might come out and say, okay, well, we're going to bring Alvarez back and we're going to go ahead and go on with the remake sequel of Evil Dead. But then again, also with Army of Darkness, that's a bigger budget right there. So, you know, that's even more of an issue budget-wise, is that, yeah, Evil Dead, the remake, the budget was still smaller, but as we've talked about before with distributing costs, and it's just crazy. So I think it's just kind of where everybody wants to put their money towards, you know, which one is going to be more successful. And I guess a lot of people think, a lot of the studios, or at least the company, thinks that Sam Raimi's Army of Darkness 2 will be the better film to make some high-quality dough from.
I don't know. Yeah.
But I'm with you. I mean, it'd be great if they could release one and then the next year release the other one. Because I, too, enjoyed where they went with the remake. But
indeed. Well, that was it, though. That's my news. That's all I've got.
Tim here with a quick insert. It turns out that there has been an update to Matt's findings on the Freddy Alvarez and the Evil Dead 2 news. I'm getting this from a TotalFilm.com article, and it says, "Update: Alvarez denies Evil Dead 2 rumors. He says that the sequel is still alive. Alvarez has given an update to Bloody Disgusting, refuting that the above story, explaining that a sequel is not on the immediate horizon, but is still a prospect further down the track. Roto meant we're not actually making Evil Dead 2 right now, because the priority is Sam Raimi's Army of Darkness 2, says Alvarez. But the plan of making a sequel to our Evil Dead is very much alive. And Total Film goes on to conclude with, looks like it's harder to make a corpse of this one than we'd first thought. Never turn your back on a deadite. ... And that will conclude this update for Matt's Evil Dead News.
The end until next week. And now, I believe it is time for Masterpiece Discussion with Matt and Tim. This week, on Masterpiece Discussion, we are discussing the Movie Mezzanine article by Colin Biggs entitled "An Inquisition for Our Readers. Does rewatchability equal excellence?" Tell us, Tim, would you like to discuss this article and talk about that?
Yes, I very much would like to discuss this article from MovieMezzanine.com, written by Colin Biggs, entitled "An Inquisition for..." Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, so the point of this article, it's a pretty short article too, but the idea here is that a lot of the movies, he goes over the Oscar winners for Best Picture from the last several years, and he goes down the list: Argo, The Artist, The King's Speech, The Hurt Locker, Slumdog Millionaire, No Country for Old Men, The Departed, Crash, Million Dollar Baby, and Chicago. So he's literally going back 10 years here. And what he's trying to say is, will any of these movies pass what is known as the TNT test? Okay, and this is, of course, is Turner Network Television, the one that the channel that runs 24-hour marathons of movies, like on Christmas Day, you get A Christmas Story and stuff, because it's just that rewatchable, it's that familiar, it's the perennial favorites. Do any of these movies meet that test? And if they don't, should they have been deemed the better movie? Is it, for example, he says that The Departed clearly is one of those movies that can be watched over and over again, so that passes muster. Argo definitely has the potential to be on there and is going to probably be one of those movies that people can watch over and over again. You'll see it on TNT or whatever. But movies like The Artist and Crash are kind of one-offs that once they're watched, people won't go back to them again. And again, he even closes the article by saying, how many times has How Green Is My Valley been played in comparison to Citizen Kane? And to that I say, personally, that rewatchability equals excellence of a different pedigree. When you watch a movie like The Artist, which, for me, way deserved to win. That movie, as far as I'm concerned, that was... it's one of the best movies I think I can safely say it's one of the best movies I've seen in the last like 3 or 4 years. And while it's not something that you might be able to sit down and watch every day, and it's not going to be one of those movies, it can't be. It really can't be. Nobody's going to, in the general movie-going public, hardly anybody is going to sit down, especially for the TNT version, and sit down and watch a silent movie. They're just not going to do it. That does not mean that the movie wasn't good. And it does not mean that even if you only need to see it once and never go back to it, except maybe occasionally when it's been a few years and it's like, wow, you know what? I just really feel like seeing that movie. And you sit down and watch it again and then maybe pick it up again in another 3 or 4 years. That does not mean that the movie isn't excellent. And that does not mean that it was not the best for its time when it was released. There are also certain movies that come back and you're like, okay, well, maybe it shouldn't have won at all, but people were swept up for whatever reason. It still doesn't mean that it didn't deserve to win, especially in terms of Oscar winners. And it doesn't mean, just in general moviedom, that seeing a movie one time and then you don't need to see it again destroys the excellence that was there. And movies for me like Slumdog Millionaire, The Artist, and to a lesser degree, The King's Speech, because for me, that's kind of a movie that I know I wouldn't mind watching. If I ever saw it was on, I'd probably stop and watch it, because Colin Firth was just fucking amazing there. And of course, Jeffrey Rush, too. Don't get me wrong. I just think it's an excellence of a different pedigree. And I don't think that one should be discounted just because you can't sit there and watch it 100 times in a row. I don't think that that should be the standard by which an award should be given. It's the quality of the film up against the quality of another film. And rewatchability is not the end-all be-all of which one's the better movie. For me. I'm not saying that it's not important, and I'm not saying that the one that should be rewatchable should always lose. I just think that it's not what it's all about. Because if you were going to go off of something like, oh, well, can we just watch it a million times? The Artist may not have made it. Especially may not have made it over here. And yet, it's just such a damn good story. And it's such a wonderful film that I would certainly be remiss to say that I've never seen it. I feel like if I keep going, I'm just going to go in circles. So that's what I have to say.
To pretty much some degree, I definitely agree with you. However, one thing that gets me is that what is excellence regarded as? You know, people look at excellence as if it did great at the box office, or is it personal preference? And I think that's kind of something where Colin Biggs kind of doesn't really touch on, and he doesn't really bring it up. I think excellence is way too much of a fluff word to really use to back up his article. And I guess what I'm getting at is that one of the all-time favorite TNT, what, you know, you can call a TNT movie, that a lot of people will watch and a lot of people consider is their favorite film because they rewatch it all the time. And it's not only Shawshank Redemption, because that is definitely one of them. But the film Rudy, about the Notre Dame kid who ends up playing one football game and they win and it's all, you know, happy-go-lucky, happy movie.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but it was to kind of answer the question you were posing at the beginning with the word excellence. Mm-hmm. It is defined as the quality of being outstanding or extremely good.
Okay. But do I find the movie Rudy to be outstanding? Even though I could sit down and rewatch it, or how, you know, anybody or a number of people can sit down and rewatch it. No. Shawshank Redemption, on the other hand? You know, I think Shawshank Redemption is a great movie. It is completely different from Rudy. I think there are different elements to Shawshank Redemption that I happen to enjoy more so. And yet, Shawshank Redemption didn't win the Academy Award. Rudy didn't win the Academy Award. Yet they live on in basic cable. And then, like kind of what Matt was talking about with The Departed, Martin Scorsese's film won the Academy Award for Best Screenplay, Best Picture back in 2007. Well, let's take a look at the Best Picture nominees from that year. Babel, Letters from Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine, The Queen. Totally different movies. They're completely different in style and direction, especially in storylines in particular, just completely different from each other. Personally, what I thought the best movie of that year was Letters from Iwo Jima. I thought that was an awesome movie. Well, what does it have that a lot of people are turned off by? Subtitles, for one thing. It's based on the enemy's perspective of the Battle of Iwo Jima. The Japanese, Ken Watanabe, who I believe was also nominated for an Academy Award. Just an excellent performance. To me, that was the most emotional, engaging of the movies that were nominated. Well acted, I felt. Had excellent action that played out through it. However, the movie was not about the action. It was about the relationships between the men, and it successfully allowed me to connect in some way and to become emotionally involved with who the United States perceived as the enemy during World War II. Now, I didn't have that same experience with The Queen, with The Departed. I have, I guess, similar yet different experience with Little Miss Sunshine, where I absolutely love the characters, and to me, I felt that the writing and the development of Little Miss Sunshine was better than The Departed. But then look at The Departed. It has an all-star cast. Don't quote me on this, but it could have even had a bigger box office draw than the other movies. It has Martin Scorsese as the director. It has Leonardo DiCaprio in the lead and Matt Damon. So it has all the aspects of that. It's about Boston, very much rooted into East Coast culture. In the Boston culture, mob, it's everything that makes a Martin Scorsese movie that makes it appealing to other people. And yet, it has a lot of attention. Do I think that movie is great? Yes. Can I rewatch it? Yes, but not as much as I could watch Little Miss Sunshine. I couldn't watch Letters of Iwo Jima every day or once a week. I could even hardly maybe even watch it once a year. Because that movie left a mark that forever, like moments from that movie, scenes, deaths, will forever be ingrained in my memory. Unlike scenes from, say, The Queen, for example, or The Departed. I love the movie, but there are just specific key moments I can take from Iwo Jima and remember it on a whim than I could from The Departed. Letters from Iwo Jima was probably the least successful of those movies that were nominated. Yet, to me, that is an excellent movie. So I am with Matt as well in saying that rewatchability does not equal excellence. It's like with Gravity. Matt really liked Gravity. He thinks it has the rewatchable quality to it. However, I had an issue with it, and yes, I think it's rewatchable on a bigger screen. To me, it felt like I couldn't rewatch it on a smaller screen due to the technicality of it and the 3D and special effects and all that stuff. But I still think the movie was well made, and I think for what it was, it is still a great movie.
All right, well, there you go. Oh, and just so for your edification, Little Miss Sunshine was an $8 million budget. $100 million box office, mm-hmm. and Departed was a $90 million budget, $289 million box office.
Oh, wow. So they both did pretty well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Profit-wise, I would say that Little Miss Sunshine definitely cleared more.
Yeah.
I would say you could successfully sell it as a sleeper hit, but just in terms of top draw money.
Yeah. But Iwo Jima was still the less of those, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, no.
Yeah.
You would just kind of postulated out there. I was just trying to help, man.
That's cool. No, it's just like it's funny looking back at those and just seeing how vastly different those movies are.
Oh, absolutely. But speaking of movies, looks like we're down to the movie section as well, are we not?
That is correct.
Then let's do it, sir. Let's get right to it.
The movie!
Yes, the post-Halloween movies that we can actually finally get into.
Horror movies.
Related.
Yeah. I was sitting there. I didn't think about it when we were, coming to terms with what movies we were going to be watching this week or whatever, and it didn't even dawn on me. And so I'm sitting here watching. I'm like, man, why are we watching horror movies still? Didn't we? I don't know. I'm one of those in the moment people for seasons or holidays, I guess. For me, when we're in October, let's do it. Horror movie it up, bring it out.
I don't necessarily consider Maniac or Antiviral horror movies, because mainly at least one of the two just really wasn't done all that well to, I think, even be considered a horror movie. More so exploitive violence and gore than really any horror elements to it.
I don't know. I'm all about like horror movies or whatever in October. And then that's not to say I won't watch the occasional horror flick that pops up or something if it's something that looks interesting. But and then like at Christmas time, right? So and then from like the day after Thanksgiving until Christmas night at like midnight, fine, let's do Christmas music and we can watch Christmas movies and have a nice Christmassy time. But from literally, that's it. No more before I hear the kids, even like kids. One of the girls a couple weeks ago was walking by singing Jingle Bells to herself. Wasn't even saying, I heard it and I said, stop. I'm sorry.
You ruined her day.
That's right. Drop the hammer. There is no Christmas until the day after Thanksgiving.
Silence. Satan is Satan's month.
That's right. That is right. So yeah, that's just kind of how I roll with it. You know, I'm all, I don't know. I like to celebrate things when they should be celebrated.
And just to get down to it, it's my fault. I saw that these were new movies. It is my fault.
I'm not saying anything.
And I kicked myself in the butt because...
Hang on. I could have said no. Could I have not?
You could have.
That's right. I could have pitched a couple... That's what happened this week, right? We've got a couple of movies that are in the mix that necessarily weren't. Because you were like, hey, let's watch this. And I'm like, hey, now how about we watch this? And you're like, all right, well, let's see what we can do. And so that's how we work together. You suggest... I agree or tacitly agree or say no, and that's how I could have said no. I did not. I'm not going to throw you under the bus. There's no bus driving right now. You know. So I was all I'm trying to say. I wasn't trying to like, you know, hint or, you know, whatever.
I just disagree with myself. I have a constant text
the other day when you were like, that's why I had to do the LOL. You picked them. I don't, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have a constant like upset stomach from watching like Hellraiser the night before, and then it's like, oh my god, that is so gory and 80, like a classic 80s gory movie. Into watching Maniac, like whenever I watched it, I don't even remember now.
I think it was a couple Thursday. Days.
Yeah,
Wednesday or Thursday? It was Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, Wednesday. 2 days ago. Yeah, Wednesday.
Yeah. So, okay. So I guess you guys at this point would love to know what the fuck we're talking about. All right. So the movies for this week are Captain Phillips, clearly not one of the ones we're referring to at this point, Antiviral, and Maniac. So guess which ones we're now referring to.
And that would be the remake of Maniac, the 2013.
True. This is the 2012. Yes, this is the 2012 version. Sorry. Guess we should. It is the remake of the 1980 film of the same name. What do you want to start with, sir?
Let's do Captain Phillips.
Okay. Captain Phillips. The 2013 American action thriller directed by Paul Greengrass, starring Tom Hanks and Barkhad Abdi. Did I get it right that time? Abdi?
Yes.
Okay, we're hoping I got that right. So, yes. All right, Captain Phillips. 2013 American action thriller directed by Paul Greengrass, stars Tom Hanks and Barkhad Abdi. And, of course, this is the story of Captain Phillips, the guy who back in 2009 was taken hostage by Somali pirates. Personally, I was really not looking forward to this movie. And again, it goes all the way back to my based on a true story. Okay, so there were some Somali pirates that took over a ship and kidnapped a dude named Captain Phillips. That's, for me, that I figured beyond that, not really going to be seeing anything that's worth seeing. It's just going to be all Hollywood fluff and whatever. And then, of course, the critics are like, oh, it's amazing. Best performance of Tom Hanks' career. Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh my god, everybody wants to see this movie. So I went and I saw the movie. And it's a long movie.
It was good, though. I did tell you it was good.
I have one word for you, sir. Melancholia. That's all I have for you.
I will mute my microphone.
So I went and I saw this movie, and I must say I was actually pleasantly surprised, even though I knew how it turned out, because you know what, I had a TV back then and a radio back in 2009, so I was kind of listening to the news and watching the news occasionally, so I already knew how it all turned out and everything. I could not believe how good of a job they had done with keeping the tension alive in this film. Even though I knew how it was going to turn out, I was very surprised. And it was interesting to see how these two minds worked. And from the different perspectives of how these guys thought, what their lives were like, I thought that they did a very nice job of setting that up and kind of showing the disparity between the two. And yet, clearly showing that Abdulwali Musa was not stupid. This was not a guy who purposely went out of his way to get in over his head, and he was not an idiot by any stretch of the imagination. He was smart. He knew what was going on, and he was trying to stay ahead. He honestly, at the end of the day, he was out-strategized, and even though they ended up on the lifeboat together or whatever. It was a good movie. It was well shot. It was well acted. I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised. I give this movie 4 stars on all of its technical merits and everything like that. For me, this is definitely one of those not rewatchable movies. It's not going to hurt the rating or anything like that, but it's for me, and I believe for quite a few people, will be a one-time viewing, and I think that this is also going to be huge Oscar fodder come around the back end there. That's it, man. There's not a whole lot to say about this one. If you've been alive in the last 5 years, then you more like, or 4 years really, you pretty much know, well, for the most part already, how it all turns out and everything.
Well, I've been alive for a little more than 5 years. However, back in 2009, I might not have been as alive as I was, or as I am right now, especially more consciously of what was happening in the news. I mean, I was nearing my final year of college, so I had no idea how this movie ended or what happened to Captain Phillips. So that didn't add to my hesitation of seeing this movie. However, the reason why I was kind of worried about going to see it, not only was the running time long, it's movie's like 2 hours and 15 minutes or so, but it was the director's name attached to the movie, Paul Greengrass. Paul Greengrass is known for his crazy ass, shaky ass camera that is pretty damn ridiculous. I think, especially when a director utilizes that, and I don't mean utilize in a good way, I mean utilize as in fall back on crazy hectic camera movements to establish tension or to make a crazy action scene more, I guess, cooler, make it cooler looking for the audience. I don't know. But, you know, he did the Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum. He did United 93. And again, all the movies were just forced by the falsified action. And I love the Bourne movies. I really do. It's just the Steadicam stuff. I think that was kind of a fad at the time. And I was just kind of worried that it would transition into this movie. And you know what? I happen to say that I feel that Captain Phillips is Paul Greengrass's most mature film. And there is none... there's hardly any crazy fast camera movements at all. It's more of like a steady camera shot movement, establishing shot. There's these great following shots where you actually... It feels like you're walking into the ship. So you get this great sense of atmosphere and of the set and what the and what all the guys on the ship, what they're dealing with when they're hiding from the Somali pirates and exactly how vast and how big the ship really is. And that's when I think camera movement, when the cinematographer or even a director or the camera operator is holding the camera and walking with it, I think that is when it is best utilized. Not with quick turns and movements and trying to do crazy zoom-ins and move the camera a bit to establish that, ooh, man, we're making this look as real as possible. Because you know what? Whenever I'm looking at somebody, I really zoom into their face and move my head around to really give it that more realistic. Yeah, that's all crappy bullshit that it's just been way overused. And it has no effect as maybe it once did. Maybe it once did back in 2007, 2008. But this movie, again, his most mature, great camera movement, amazing storytelling. Matt already touched on the tension. And I just gotta say that Tom Hanks' amazingness can only be summed up, not only, but can definitely be summed up by the film's closing moments. And I don't want to say anything at the end, just in case if those out there don't know what happens.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize, Tim. I have to jump in here because I could not agree with you more. I totally forgot about that until just now when you mentioned it.
Oh, and the ending?
The ending. And that is probably the best part of the whole movie. I have never seen anything that real that I can think of ever that has been
that real. Because a lot of movies don't touch on that. Like, okay, I mean, spoiler alert for the next minute. Give everybody, you know, just a second. Spoiler alert for Captain Phillips. Gonna ruin the ending. Skip ahead a minute. Okay. You see all these movies where people survive these traumatic events, especially with all these crazy, like, Transformers and Superman, it's just all this destruction. And yet, this is a movie about a man captured by Somali pirates, and also his ship and crew were taken over for a period of time for the movie. But he was stuck on this ship, and he thought he was going to die. He was put in that horrifying situation, which I couldn't relate whatsoever to that at all. And with a lot of these other movies, these people come out of those situations just like, oh, I love my wife, and it just automatically goes back to what seems like just hours later, and the guy is completely fine, or the people are completely fine. But this actually goes in and shows how this affects him emotionally and neurologically, I think that's right, and just how it just in shock, it shows that shock. And I just appreciate it so much, and he just does it so effectively, and it's just awesome. It's amazing, and I'm just glad that moment has been captured in this movie, and that just even adds to the movie. So I give this movie 5 stars. I really do think it's a great movie. Originally, I thought the running time, the movie was a little bit longer, and I thought the pace was kind of slower, and I originally gave this movie 4.5 stars because of that. But since then, I read more into the story, and I found out later on that Phillips was actually on the captured and in that lifeboat for 5 days. And so instead of showing like each individual day, Greengrass edited it, or him and his editors extended the movie or made the movie like that towards the end, so the audience really has no idea what day it is or how long it actually feels that time has progressed or time has lapsed And, you know, thinking about it, that totally had that effect. And I appreciate it, so I give it 5 stars. I think it's a great movie.
Okay, well, that takes care of Captain Phillips. Of the remaining 2 movies, I guess this one is the better of the 2, but not by much.
It is more inspired. It has more inspiration, I think, behind it to try to achieve decent movie status.
Yeah, I'll definitely give it points for originality. I must say that the basis for the plot is I hadn't really seen it. It's a little bit like Gamer because of the celebrity obsessed future, near future concept that they have. But yeah. Antiviral is a 2012 Canadian horror film directed by Brandon Cronenberg.
He is the son of director David Cronenberg, which gives a little bit of detail about the reason why this movie is as weird as it is.
Yes. Okay. It's really hard to describe this movie. It's... okay. From Wikipedia, let me just read you the first line in the plot description. It's just the first sentence. Okay. In a dystopian, celebrity-obsessed near future, Sid March is employed by the Lucas Clinic, a company which purchases viruses and other pathogens from celebrities who fall ill in order to inject them into clients who desire a connection with celebrities. Are you lost yet? Because I sure was. It's a very original movie. I cannot disagree with that. This is a very original movie, and I think I get what they were trying to go for in terms of how people want to connect with people and how far they're willing to go to connect with people. I get the subversive nature of some of the characters in this movie, and there's definitely some kind of gross shit going on in this movie as well. But it was just too all over the place. I found myself having trouble towards the back third of the movie keeping up with what was going on. Moreover, I was having a real hard time trying to understand why it was going down the way it was going down. It was a little confusing. I thought that there was some stupid, gross stuff just for the sake of stupid, gross stuff. And I don't know. I think this is just a concept that simply went horribly wrong. And this is coming from somebody who likes Malcolm McDowell a lot. I gave this movie 2 stars. I'm not really sure what more to... It probably would have gotten less than that if I didn't at least appreciate the effort. If I could give it an A for effort, I'd do that. I'll give it an A for effort. That's not even part of our system, but I'll give it an A for effort. It's A for antiviral, A for effort. Then it's just a 2-star movie. Yeah. Take it away, sir.
To me, this is kind of a difficult movie for me to review. Because it's definitely original. It has an excellent, bizarre concept. But it takes a huge chunk of the first half of the movie to try to convince the audience into buying this concept. Because one thing about a sci-fi movie... Which, again, like, I personally don't think this is a horror movie, more so of a cultural sci-fi movie. I don't know what I could label that as. But I guess anything that pertains to culture, an odd and different way of exploiting our effed up culture, or a portion of it, people consider that horror because a lot of people are horrified, I guess, by how other people perceive them, in a way. I don't know. But it takes so much time to try to convince us to buy into what is going on. And during this time, they're throwing out all this goofy, like, technical jargon, like the electrospectrometer picture reader. Each virus has a face to it, and we have to morph the face in order to make it so nobody else can catch it. That probably even sounds weird, because it's just super weird. And then eventually, as the movie gets going, towards the middle part, you start kind of like feeling comfortable with it, and then you're like, okay, maybe this movie will pick up a bit. But it really doesn't, and there's nothing that really makes it take off story-wise, acting-wise. The movie just kind of follows down the path of repeated following shots, following the lead the cameras behind the lead character and watching him as he's hunched over and walking down a hallway. Or there's just random shots and multiple shots of him looking all sad and lonely and sickly throughout the whole movie. And the guy plays him well. I mean, the actor, based off watching this movie, he seems like a fine actor. It's just there's nothing behind this movie, and I'm not saying like an action scene. It's just it's missing a couple key elements. And like what I mentioned beforehand was that this is directed by Brandon Cronenberg, who is David Cronenberg's son. And David Cronenberg is known for directing such classics as Videodrome, The Fly, Naked Lunch, Existence, a whole slew of movies. And like with Videodrome, and I know Matt and I reviewed Videodrome here a few years ago. Matt didn't like it. However, it's an interesting take on American culture and how we rely on videotapes and media and consumer television and just stuff like that, reality TV, and how it can take over people's minds. Well, in some way, this is kind of Brandon Cronenberg's Videodrome. However, he is inspired to make this movie. It's just, it doesn't have that extra push to it. It doesn't have that moment of the movie to where once you feel comfortable, you're like, oh, okay, I see where it's going. And then you can fall into the, you know, go along for the ride. It's just with this movie, there's no ride to it. It's not like a roller coaster. It's kind of like taking one of those goofy ass little kid train rides through a cornfield at a pumpkin patch. I paid money to see this, and it's not necessarily, it wasn't worth it. I mean, it's worth it because I get to see my kids enjoying it, but ultimately you get absolutely nothing else out of it, in no way. And this is where I felt with this movie. There's nothing funny about it. It's visually striking, but there is only so much a visually striking movie can take you. Yeah. Kind of like this review.
Nice.
So, all yeah, right. I give it, I guess, I give it 2.5 stars. Because that's like right
the
in the middle
OK
of,
rating. Yes, it's yeah. The OK. All right. I gave it the A for effort rating, and you gave it the OK rating. All
right. Right.
Well, then last but not least is Maniac, the, again, 2012 psychological slasher film. So, I guess, maybe horror, maybe not. I don't know. Again, remake of the 1980 film of the same name. This one stars Elijah Wood as a serial killer. It was directed by Frank Calhoun. And basically, this is just a dude who's got some severe mommy issues. Mommy was a hooker. And used to practice take your kid to work day. Also, conveniently worked from home. That's always good, right?
Wait, so your mom wasn't like that?
No, that's a horse of another color. Yeah, okay, so this is an interesting movie. The concept behind this movie is that ostensibly you are watching it from a first-person perspective. And you only see Elijah Wood in glimpses. So essentially, if you could see his reflection in something, then you would see him, because again, it's like a first person view. And so when you're a serial killer, well, now isn't that just the most interesting view you'll ever see, especially when your fetish is scalping people, specifically women who might or might not remind you of your mother. This was another 2-star movie for me. I think that they were... This one, very easy to follow. I did not get the feeling that they were trying to update it. And so, therefore, I wasn't sure what they wanted me to take from this. I was fine with the gore. It is some seriously over-the-top gore. But, I don't know. For me, I was fine with it. Hence, I mean, it's because it's a slasher movie. So when you're watching a slasher movie, you know, that's what's going to happen. I just wasn't really sure why I needed to care about this. I think that's where it went wrong. I think that they tried a little bit too hard to humanize poor Frank. That's the character that Elijah Wood plays.
and they were trying a little too hard to get you to understand why he's so screwed up. That doesn't work in this kind of a movie. The more demented you are, and the more demented you are without reason, the more effective a slasher movie is. Because part of what makes a horror movie, or even a slasher movie, scary is that you don't understand why this is happening. And part of the quest in a typical horror movie is to try to figure out what's going on and why. And so that's what leaves you so open to lots of scares and lots of thriller-type moments and nail-biting moments and, "Whoa, don't go up the stairs, woman, run out of the house," kind of a thing. Here, they've gone the exact opposite. They're trying to give you a window into what makes this person so screwed up. And they even try to give brownie points by trying to make him, you know, keep it in check. And that's where I think it goes wrong, because there's really no point to that. Especially when you are juxtaposing that with such spectacular, and not necessarily in a good way, but just spectacular violence. It just kind of made the movie a turnoff for me. And what could have been a solid 3-star movie became a 2-star movie for me. And that's kind of where I land on it.
Yeah. The first-person camera technique was cool and pretty impressive. I mean, there was a lot of thought behind how they were going to shoot it. And I read an interview, and I watched this kind of little interview slash kind of making of the movie on YouTube. And they were talking about how much time and how much work went into creating these shots and this feeling and this effect. And he was saying that Elijah Wood, he had to work super close with the camera operator, and he had to help like tap the camera operator on the shoulder and kind of like move him and to help create his movement and exactly where he was going to go. And whenever they were doing the scenes where he was driving, only one of the hands was Elijah Wood's, and they had to get somebody else to be the other hand. And they had to, like, figure out how to maneuver it, you know, and correctly to make it look like it's one person actually driving the car. At least Elijah Wood is driving the car. And it still goes whenever they're doing the shots where he's looking up at the mirror whenever the girl's going down on him. Or when he's in the bathroom washing his hands and he looks at the cupboard mirror or whatever. They use other mirrors to reflect images. And they also made it to where the right when he turns, the director and crew people just had to get the hell out of the way. So it's just impressive how much time went into the making, technical-wise, the making of this movie. And I think that's where all the time went. Because there, I mean, like with Matt again, I just didn't care. We've seen the character with mommy issues before. It's with Psycho. So if they're going to take that route, there has to be something else behind it. And this movie is definitely gore porn, but it's gore porn without anything else backing it. Because again, you don't care. Yes, you get these cool shots and these cool scenes, how they play out, and you actually feel like you're, for a couple times, you actually feel like you're the killer in the parking lot, hiding underneath the car, waiting for the girl to pop out. But you know what he's gonna do. But yet, the only thing that really throws you off is the amount of gore and how violent this movie is. And so that's all the movie is, period. It's just gore and violence. Acting-wise, unfortunately, like a lot of Elijah Wood's dialogue had to be done on a stage later on. It was all voiceover work because he very well couldn't necessarily perform there because all this other stuff was going on. They had to worry about, again, technically. So his dialogue always seems removed, and there is an obvious disconnection between him and many of the other characters, especially the tattoo lady, who he goes back to her apartment and he brutally kills her and scalps her. But just a lot of the dialogue is just so stiff, and again, you really don't care that he's doing this to these women, and it's just, again, it just all falls into, why am I watching this? And again, if you like watching super violent, gory stuff just for the sake of watching it, this is definitely, well, at least I think this is definitely that movie. And I know that Elijah Wood can play violent, creepy-ass characters. Look at the creepy-ass character he played in Sin City. Though he didn't say anything, but my God, he... one of the best parts of the movie was his part. But yet, I mean, I give this movie 1.5 stars, and it's just mainly because of the first-person point of view and the time that they obviously spent. And you can tell that they spent a lot of time on the technical aspect. 1.5 stars.
All right, well, that wraps up yet another wonderful episode here. Next week, we are going to return to our 3-squared format, as usual. And so we're going to be doing our favorite road movies for next week. Movies about road trips and things of that nature. The flicks, however, for next week are going to be Ender's Game, Bad Grandpa, and then finally a movie recommended way back when, but we haven't forgotten. A movie recommended by a listener. Movie 43. That's right. We're going to brave it, folks. We're going to see what it's all about. We're going to see whether or not this truly is comedy exposed. And I guess we're back to all of our regular style musical stylings. So I believe we're back to the standard spiel, are we not?
We are. Yes, we are. We are finished with the horror stuff. I can go back to my normal editing time of 7 hours.
Woo! Yay! All right, well then let's do this. The music you've been listening to in its entirety has been brought to you by our music partners, Cries of Solace. That's right, you can check them out at criesofsolace.com. You can also go to reverbnation.com, myspace.com, or facebook.com/criesofsolace. As far as we are concerned, we're still the SLS cast, and you can go to slscast.com. Find us there. You can send us an email to theslscast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @theslscast. You can go to Facebook and search there, too, for the SLS cast. Find us there. And, of course, subscribe to us on iTunes. And until next week, this is Matt saying that thanks to James Avery, I get to say this. You are only an actor if you absolutely love it and cannot do anything else. Starving for your art is great in your 20s, but it's not so great at 35. It has to be absolute love. You can't worry about being a movie star or anything else. Just love. That's it.
That I agree. And in fact, just to say real quick, a lot of the college, the speeches, what are they called? The graduation
commencement
speeches?
Commencement
speeches? Yeah, thank you. The commencement speech, I was going to say the commissioner speeches, but I wasn't. The commencement speeches, the guys who have fought hard, or the people who have fought hard to be in the acting business, will tell that to the students and say, you know, if you guys want to be a doctor, if you have an itching to be a garbage man, do that because you have a higher happiness rate and a much higher success rate falling in that path than you do in the acting career path. But, yeah. And this is Tim saying that I agree with Matt's quote. And I need to take a nap. Take care, you guys.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, @theslscast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.